Hi, good morning, everyone. This is Julie over here at the platform called Book of Hours. I am going to make this one public today. So, not only will the paid subscribers on Substack and Patreon, the paid subscribers on Patreon, hear it, but as well as the general public for anyone who cares to listen. So, I want to start this by saying that I'm Generation X. So I am like right in the center of Generation X, born in 1970. So obviously I've just given away my age. And one thing I've noticed about our generation is that unlike the older generation, we tend to process information as it comes to us and then filter it accordingly. So we know that on a day-to-day basis, every day, the rules will change, the narratives will change, the information coming at us will change, and within that change is a lot of deception, is a lot of manipulation. And this comes from, and I'm just making a very sweeping generalized point here, this comes from being raised by baby boomers who would literally change the rules on us from day to day. Because baby boomers gave birth to us probably at pretty young ages themselves. And so we're still trying to figure out the world and still trying to figure out how to navigate parenting while they were, having us. And so Generation X grew up with this sort of understanding that nothing would ever be the same from day to day. Like the rules would constantly change. Parents would constantly, make random rules and random authoritarian statements and policy within the household. And so Generation X had to learn how to be really flexible, really open, and always with the understanding that we will never ever have like a specific answer to anything. So what I'm finding with some of the older generations of influencers on social media, such as X, which is really the only platform I'm on, I deleted my Facebook account. I deleted my Instagram. I haven't deleted the YouTube page, and I might actually put this on YouTube, depending on how much time I have. But one thing I'm noticing is that they want answers now. They want to know what happened to. Regarding the Charlie Kirk assassination, they want to know who did it, how it was done, who's behind it, what's going on. They want the answers now. And it's almost as if they don't really understand that we're living in the fourth industrial revolution, where the way that we are governed is based on propaganda and something called hypernormalization, which was illustrated really eloquently by Adam Curtis, who's a former BBC news person who then broke off and started doing his own thing. He does something called video essays. And so here on this platform, we sort of, gave a nod to that sort of illustration of what's happening in the world by creating our own video essays, which we did for quite a few years. Now we've gotten away from that because we had two cross-country moves in 5 years. We've had some personal stuff going on in our family of origin, especially me, that was a devastating discovery. I'm talking about a missing family member who I've recently been able to put the puzzle pieces together, and so I'm dealing with that. And it, although I'm on the Gulf Coast, this took place in California, so we're talking trafficking and that kind of thing. So that took away from our creative efforts through our video essays, not to mention we had a job loss, and then we had to scramble to get another job in this market, which is incredibly volatile right now. So, what a lot of these influencers, whoever a certain generation, are not paying attention to is the larger conversation. So you have to remember that the Bureau of Labor Statistics came out with a devastating bombshell of sort of a truth bomb, if you call if you will, the same day that Charlie Kirk was assassinated. And you have to put these two things together. So what I want to do is I want to play a little clip of an older generation influencer, someone I don't know who this person is. I don't follow them. I run in different, I run in my own sort of circle, I guess. I'm not really influenced by anybody, but I did appreciate his frustration, and I wanted to sort of, if I had an opportunity to sit down with this person, I would probably let him, you know, let him sort of vent and do his thing. Like, I'm angry, I'm frustrated, I'm not getting the information I need. And I would let him speak. And then as a Generation X, I would say something along the lines of, I truly respect where you're coming from. I want to give a nod to your influence that you've had in the online community. But perhaps we can break this down together and get some perspective. So this individual, his name is Michael Savage. I guess he's very popular. I appreciate some of the things that he said this morning in his 16-minute podcast. It's already got almost 200,000 views, so clearly he's very popular. But what I want to do is play a small clip of something that he brought up this morning, and then I want to respond to it. And this will be an extension of the conversation that I started with the paid subscribers on a private channel yesterday. But this one I'm going to make public. And so some of you may have already heard some of the things I'm going to say. So just be patient, and we'll get through this together. So let me go ahead and get this set up so that you can hear it. And then I can respond to it.
This is a government cover-up. This is total and absolute bullshit. And I'll repeat it for those of you who are so stupid to keep repeating the big lie. I'll repeat this to you. They claim he removed the barrel from the Mauser and fitted the receiver and stock in his backpack and barrel in his pants leg. That's after he shot Charlie Kirk, he did all of this? Let's see now. I'll remove the receiver and stock, and I'll put it in the backpack. And I'll jump up the roof, even though you don't see it in the backpack, it's there, because Sean Hannity told you it's there. And Ben Shapiro told you it's there. And Mark Levin told you it's there. And then he runs in the woods after killing Charlie Kirk, a wonderful young man, and he reinstalls the barrel and the stock together and leaves it neatly in the woods for all of us to see in a nice box. You talk about breadcrumbs in the woods? Why would a guy running from the law after killing someone stop to reinsert a barrel? He wouldn't. It's all fake. None of this makes sense. Who did it? And why did they do it? See, the real question is, why did they kill Charlie Kirk? I don't know him. We approached him several times. He said, I love your show. We have it in writing. I'd love to be on your show. I'll tell you exactly what happened. We'd love to be on your show, Michael, Charlie. He wrote back to Karen, who works for me. I'd love to be on your show. And my staff will arrange it. The staff never got back to Karen, no matter how many times she called him. This is a giant deep state cover-up from the top to the bottom. But why? You have to ask yourself, why would they want to knock this kid off? Something doesn't make sense. Even if this guy jumped off the roof, did it? Why would they kill him, Charlie Kirk? Why? He was not that radical a guy. He was a middle-of-the-road, Christian broadcaster, in plain English. He said it like it is. But why would they kill him? Because he was marshaling the youth? You would kill him. Oh, you say the left did it? Are you sure? You sure the left did it? See, that's the only question. All the breadcrumbs lead to a leftist. That's why you shouldn't trust the narrative. And I should say goodbye. That's all. I don't trust one word of what I'm hearing. Not one stinking word.
Okay. So that's... That was Michael Savage. And he... What he's not realizing, because he's so clouded with emotion right now, but I'm sure that eventually he will come to this conclusion. When you start saying things like, you know, Charlie Kirk wasn't radical, he was just a moderate, he was just a middle of the road sort of commentator. He's somebody that, you know, went to college campuses and, you know, had meetings and had, you know, small rallies and small one-on-ones. I mean, we're not talking about, you know, 10,000, 20,000, 50,000 people coming to his events. We're talking about a guy who would set up a table and say, you know, I'm here on your campus, let's talk. And sometimes those conversations would lead to bigger rallies, you know, where he would actually sit on a stage, like the one in Utah. But for the most part, he was just a middle-of-the-road guy. So why in the world would the individuals who were behind his assassination, why would they feel that they need to get rid of somebody seemingly so innocuous? And I think that's the answer. That's the answer right there, is that he wasn't anything special, which means he could relate to all of us. We've all been conditioned our entire lives, at least my entire life, by the powers that be, by our government and by our institutional leaders and by every, you know, even our elementary school teachers all the way up to our college advisors, you know, would always sort of preface our conversations with them with this idea that, you know, it's hard out there, we're not that special, we always need to stand out and do something extraordinary in order to have a safe life, like being able to make enough money to, you know, pay our mortgage and pay our rents and live a life. Now, this is not something that the baby boom generation ever grew up with. They grew up with this idea that, you know, here, we're going to give you excellent mortgage rates. We're going to give you affordable college. Here's five raspberries. Go buy a house and raise a bunch of kids, you know. I mean, this generation is a completely different generation than all the generations behind them, because they actually had a government and institutional practices and social safety nets that supported them. And I think on some level, Charlie Kirk understood this. And I think that Mr. Savage is starting to get the picture. He's starting to see, like, the unfairness and the income inequality and these social dichotomies that are meant to destroy the infrastructure of society. We have Silicon Valley founders who are on record as saying, we created social media to destroy the fabric of society. The fabric of society, that social contract that says, if your neighbor is starving, feed them. If your children are bullied, the village comes together and protects them. If your society is being undermined, threatened, and destroyed by leadership, then you put the leadership on notice as a community, and you push back against that leadership. That social fabric has been decayed and frayed and fractured and made weak through the inventions of technology, social media. And as much as we love, you know, the commentators, and as much as we love the influencers, especially those of the older generation are at this place where they don't understand that we're living in a very destructive time, like the most destructive time. So Mr. Kirk would have been a person to remind people of that, and he would have won the popular vote had he run for president in a few years when he would have been age eligible. So he's 31 now, so he probably was making the plan and the reach for running for office in the next few years, which would have been a direct threat to J.D. Vance and also Gavin Newsom, both individuals who are supported by Silicon Valley. As far as what Mr. Savage said about how from this is a deep state, you know, cover up, I don't like to use that kind of language, but let's go there a little bit. Yes, I do believe that Charlie Kirk and his close entourage trusted people that they should never have trusted. I do believe that, you know, a lot of the imaging that we see about, you know, Erica, his wife, and himself with their children, some of it is heavily curated. I think she was, you know, kind of running her own business and her own platform, and he was doing his thing. Now, granted, they did love each other, and they did have, you know, a couple of beautiful children, and clearly, you know, there were more children probably on the way, or they were thinking about making more children on the way. You know, obviously they had a healthy relationship. I'm not disputing that. But I do know that in this day and age, when you're trying to make something of yourself and you have a plan to go to reach the very top of your goal, which I think the top of his goal would be to run for office or to be in some sort of political position, you have to start the process early on. So she needed to curate her social media platform and curate her messaging so that it would trend. She didn't have a lot of followers on her Instagram page, but she was getting there. And of course, Charlie Kirk had to curate his messaging and really get out there and become more popular. He would have won the popular vote. So I think that's a direct threat to J.D. Vance and Gavin Newsom. You notice Gavin Newsom came out and was just all over himself, blubbering and crying about how much he loved Charlie. And I'm like, usually it's the people, you know, my husband reminded me this morning. It's something that I've been carrying through with me since the event happened a couple of days ago. And I was one of the first ones on social media to say, this is just like the JFK story. I mean, it happened before I was born, but I know it well enough to know that what I'm looking at regarding the Charlie Kirk assassination is they're equating it through their imagery and through their actions and through their very specific social media curating. What they're doing is they're illustrating to you, they're telling you a story through the messages, through the images that you're seeing, that this is the equivalent of the JFK assassination. So you have Gavin Newsom coming out and blubbering and crying about Charlie Kirk, which is very much unlike his personality. I would know because I met him. he's also a moderate, you know, sort of Democrat in name only type of person. And then you have J.D. Vance, who you see a picture of J.D. Vance that's trending on Twitter and probably all over Facebook and Instagram and even TikTok as well, I imagine. I'm not on those platforms, but I can almost guarantee you that these images of him carrying Charlie Kirk's casket are also trending. The last time we saw an image like that was during the Kennedy administration when he was assassinated, and you had Johnson, the vice president, at the helm, at the front of the line. You had him with Jackie Kennedy. All of these images are going back to the same playbook of the JFK assassination. And even in his 16-minute conversation this morning, Michael Savage references Jack Ruby. So he's old enough, he was probably alive and very much aware of the conspiracy around the JFK assassination. So it's fortunate that finally someone with that much influence made that connection, because it seems like I was the only one that was doing it. I'm sure other people started to, but it was frustrating to me because I'm looking through a lot of Twitter commentary about this Charlie Kirk assassination, and no one is making those connections. So in hypernormalization, what we learned from Adam Curtis is that they, whether they are the powers that be, the deep state, the information peddlers, the propagandists, they always tell you what's going on. They always, always, always tell you what they're doing. And by having J.D. Vance carry the casket of Charlie Kirk, I think we can assume that the message is clear. So in answer to Michael Savage's question, which is, who did this and why? Well, I think you have your answer with that image right there. You have J.D. Vance carrying the casket of, you know, the person who was recently assassinated. So what they're doing is they're trying to project, they're trying to attach this idea that Charlie Kirk is this, you know, presidential type of person, this larger than life type of person. And I want to really encourage people to get away from the language of martyr. This is not a martyr. This is a sacrificial lamb. This is a moderate individual who could have easily reached leftists, who could have easily reached the moderate Democrat sect as well, section of the political, you know, voting constituents. I don't vote. It could have also reached the moderate Republican side. So this person could have reached across the board. Okay, so he was already becoming presidential. He was, you know, really curating his message. He was curating his image, and he was becoming a populist. And that is a direct threat to the powers that be or to the current agenda. And what is the current agenda? So who? So the people that have the current agenda are the people that are behind his assassination. And those people are the same people that were sitting right next to Trump during the 2020 conversations around declaring a national emergency over the COVID epidemic, okay? And that person is Peter Thiel. If you go back to old videos, you will see Peter Thiel was always sitting there right beside Trump. Okay, so you have Peter Thiel, who is, you know, the founder of, or the CEO, or at least the founder of a military operation that does surveillance of the entire country called Palantir. So Peter Thiel single-handedly funded J.D. Vance's campaign in Ohio, as well as his campaign for vice president. No, Peter Thiel is behind this. You also have the recent resignation of the sort of, I guess you would say, the equivalent of the director of compliance or whatever he was for the Social Security Administration, where he said, I can no longer continue my duties to this administration knowing what I know. And what I know is that every single American's utterly private and confidential data. This is more than just a violation of HIPAA rights. This is a violation of human rights, is now being funneled into bad actors. Like, all this is through the Doge, siege, you know, Doge sieged various departments throughout the federal government. You know, this happened just a few months ago. And many people have had their amygdala saturated with emotions. And so it's difficult to go back and remember that these things happened and these things are part of the step by step by step by step process to lead to something really tragic, like an assassination of a moderate who used to hang out on college campuses and talk to people. You know, that's, which is basically what Charlie Kirk was. Of course, he had this big media company, Turning Point, which He started when he was 18, you know, and it became this powerful thing, and that's great. But the reality of it is that he wasn't, you know, he wasn't all that. He wasn't amassing 10,000 people, 20,000 people, 50,000 people at his quote-unquote rallies. They weren't even rallies. They were literally just conversations. So all of these, you know, things happening in our government, you've got, you know, a feckless FBI director, of course, Kash Patel, working with a populist, Dan Bongino, I guess. You know, I don't know any of these people, but I'm basing my opinion and I'm basing this commentary on how other people view them. And I'm saying, okay, well, I see the name Dan Bongino being bandied about all over Twitter like he's really important, so he must be somebody that, say, the MAGA group is really supportive of. So they had to throw somebody like that in with Kash Patel, who's basically not allowed to do anything. You know, he's basically there to create a story that doesn't really make any sense, blame a political party. And for those of you who continue to say that this was a leftist assassination, you are not doing your country any favors. Let me make this point utterly clear. This was a, this assassination was the equivalent of the JFK assassination. But instead of assassinating a president, they took out somebody who had the potential to be a populist. And they told you that they're doing this when they had J.D. Vance carry his casket. They always tell you the truth. When they had Usha Vance holding the hand of Mrs. Kirk while they were stepping off the airplane and going down those steep stairs, and she was all shaky and sad and a widow and you know, doing and, you know, casting off that image as well, which was, I'm sure, very legitimate. She's probably just completely bewildered, just like Jackie O was, just like Jackie Kennedy was bewildered. Like, this is all, they're telling you what they're doing. So I encourage you, those with millions of followers and lots of influence on social media, to please, you know, redirect your anger and punch up. It's people like Peter Thiel who have billions of dollars and who work with military campaigns and who funded J.D. Vance's political campaigns exclusively. It's people like that that are behind this. Okay, and of course they'll keep their hands clean. And it's people like that that are also behind the beloved BT, Brian Thompson, the United Health guy who died in New York. I have a family member who worked at an affiliate of that, of United Health. So we kind of have an inside, you know, a little bit of an inside information on that. If you believe the Luigi Mangione story, then you're just silly and naive. I think it's really just time to grow up. And I think that this is where I can actually identify with the frustration that Mr. Savage has with the you know, user, what I call user nation, or the users in the general population, which are now riddled with agents and bots. So really, really look at everything that you see and everything that you hear. Look at it through a lens of deep skepticism and deep cynicism. Cynicism is the only thing, as well as skepticism, as well as listening to my intuition, and as well as not being so deeply entrenched in these conversations, but sort of looking on the outside in as like an armchair social anthropologist, you know, where I'm like, my day-to-day life is not really affected by this, but at the same time, I feel like it's sort of my duty to say something, because I've actually had people reach out to me and say, can you please start making some of your things public? Because I think that this would be a valuable voice in a sea of voices that are angry and confused, and they want to blame the wrong people. So I can understand Mr. Savage's, you know, frustration, because I'm equally frustrated. And I think that when you're dealing with somebody of that generation, that, and they're used to, you know, the facts dictating the truth, and then when the facts are removed and then replaced with quasi facts or, you know, kind of truth, and, you know, it's difficult to navigate this like really nuanced landscape. But as Generation X, that's how we grew up. We grew up with the rules changing every day. We didn't have the luxury of knowing what the facts were. You know, we had to navigate a very confusing world, you know, that was basically run by people who didn't know what the fuck they were doing, and nor did they care how that affected us. You, the generation before us, had the luxury of people who were in power and people who were authorities over you actually caring about you. So that's why Generation X is like, oh yeah, this is basically a total fucking act of absolute tyranny and fascism. That was just, you know, our Tuesday in, you know, 1982. You know, like, we get it. So the other thing too, there are a couple of other like little things I've seen as far as the imaging that's taking place. One thing that I can't seem to let go of is right before this event took place, obviously we had the event in Charlotte, and I think everybody who knows me and knows my opinion and my work well enough, and also the fact that, you know, my husband and I have some, you know, knowledge about how to make a video look real, that story is not remotely real. I do believe that the wall-eyed blonde that they're trying to tell you is a Ukrainian refugee is just an AI image, a very curated AI image. The actress who was on the train slumped behind a partition and probably like pressed a blood pack, you know, and you couldn't see anything. That was a way to, again, saturate your amygdala so that when a real assassination took place and it was right there for everybody to see, that your subconscious would not be able to reconcile it. And I'm going to play something else in a minute, from another influencer on social media who I really like. His name is Alec Zek. And what I'll do is I'll put the links to both the Mr. Savage conversation that he had this morning, as well as the Alec Zek 6-minute video. I'm going to play just like a small portion of his when I close out this broadcast. But so that original video was, you know, with the Ukrainian refugee being stabbed to death, that wasn't real. That was theatrics mixed with AI, and it was meant to subconsciously sort of tenderize you for the real assassination that was to come. You know, you can thank them for sort of tenderizing you and desensitizing you to this imagery, because the real imagery, if you would have seen the real assassination, and I did see the video of Charlie Kirk, and it was real. I mean, you can't fake something like that. If you would have seen that and not seen anything else, then you would not have been able to handle it. And there are some right-wing MAGA influencers out there who are, you know, devastated. Like, I wish that I knew them so that I could say to them, this is how you can help yourself handle this level of violence that is being waged on you. And when I say you, I mean all of us. And Charlie Kirk was a representation of that. So there's two conversations going on. You know, you're just somebody that we don't like. You're just a walking cadaver. So you get in the way of our goals, which is to basically, you know, use every part of you, use your body, your mind, your thoughts, and your talent for our benefit. And if you fight against that, you're getting in our way. We have the right to you. We own you. And so this is what we're going to do to you if you continue to do that, if you continue to exercise your human rights. And this goes beyond civil liberties. This goes beyond the Constitution. This goes way beyond that. So anybody who lives in that space of instinct and alchemy and spiritual connections to other individuals, as well as whatever religion that they adopt. And in Charlie's case, I guess he was a born-again Christian, although I have something to say about that in a minute. But, you know, the powers that be. And we're talking the Peter Thiels of the world. We're talking the people who will put all of the figureheads in place, whether they are Kash Patel or J.D. Vance or, you know, all of the people, put all of those people in place to do, basically to do their bidding, right? So that's what's happening. So, you know, that's the one conversation, is if you decide to, you know, resist this, the fact that you're our slave, basically, and it's worse than a slave. It's kind of like the equivalent of what I call grave robbing, except that you're alive, you know? And that's just a really, just morbid, macabre way of looking at this. But it is. They're kind of like Dr. Frankenstein, and they want to just chop up you as a cadaver and use your different parts for their agenda, whether it's data analysis so that they can sell off your body parts or your thoughts to various agencies, or whether it's to experiment on you with what they call chemical, biological, and neurological prophylactics, also known as vaccines, you know, whatever it is that they want to do to you, it's like they just want to rob you and you're not even in the grave yet. So this is this goes back to medieval, just like blood sacrifices. And so that's why I want to get into I want to touch on, without going too deep into it, because I'm not one of those Illuminati baby-eating Luciferian types, but I will say that what you saw with the Charlie Kirk assassination was not someone being lifted up as a martyr to suspend your sense of reasoning and suspend your sense of logic about the thing. What you saw is a blood sacrifice. What you saw was a sacrificial lamb. And there are a lot of people out there who believe that sacrifices are taking place all over, in every institution and in every agency, in order to, you know, move forward with an agenda. And, you know, in this particular case, I will use some of that language, which is way out of my comfort zone. Let me tell you this. This was not a martyr. This was a sacrificial lamb. Because a sacrifice had to be made in order to have that turning point into this new fourth industrial revolution, into the 21st century of the way we operate our economy and the way that we all are managed. If you think of the United States as a corporation, which I know a lot of you do, then we are all sort of the slaves to what our managers dictate to us, right? So sacrifices had to be made in order to turn into and pivot into that new life, that new way of existing. Capitalism has basically run its course. We're now looking at something a little bit more, we're looking at a debt-based economy, which is again a very beige way of saying grave robbing when you're not dead yet. You know, it's basically forcing people into an act of perpetual slavery. And one of the reasons I brought up the Bureau of Labor Statistics earlier is because they came out on the same day that Charlie Kirk was assassinated. They came out with a bombshell report that basically said we have 911,000 less jobs than we had originally reported. So there's that, you know, there's that signal to the powers that be that it's time to move forward with the blood sacrifice or with the sacrificial lamb. 9/11, right? 911,000 jobs than they had originally reported, meaning that there are millions of people, millions, that are out of work right now that have never experienced a job loss before, that are suddenly out of work, and they thought that they had a decent amount of jobs that they could apply for because the BLS, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, had been reporting that we had a fairly, you know, robust job market. And on September 10th, they came out with the truth and they said, yeah, sorry, we lied. We actually have 911,000 less jobs than what we had originally reported. So there's a reason that they chose 911,000, 911, right? So some of my paid subscribers and patrons and patrons had already heard this before, but now I'm going to make it public. So you have to make those connections. Another point that I want to make regarding the born-again Christian thing is I've been hearing my whole life about how born-again Christians are the most oppressed and the most persecuted. Meanwhile, this is the religion or the denomination that has benefited the most from what I could see. They benefit from tax write-offs, and they preach this idea of like wealth religion, like God wants you wealthy. And I just don't, like, I don't really subscribe to that thought. And one of the things that was fascinating to me was an image of Erica Kirk, Charlie Kirk's wife, was in a car. And she's, of course, you know, shrouded in black and has black sunglasses on, the grieving widow. And she held out what looked like a rosary. She held it out the window of the car that she was in. And someone took a picture of it. And of course it was planted and it's all curated. None of this is real, remind you. I don't disagree that the grief is real. The shock is real. But the imagery that we're seeing curated on social media is not real. It is manufactured through a media branding sort of, you know, tech apparatus, okay, where it's all meant to, you know, to subvert your consciousness, to subvert your critical thinking, to subvert your analysis of the world as it is. But I cannot deny that her holding out the window in her hand and holding it in a way that Catholics typically hold rosaries, like they weave the necklace part of the rosary throughout their fingers and let the cross dangle. There's a specific way that you hold a rosary. I mean, there's a very, it's almost, there's a very, there's a formula to it. It's almost scientific. So she was holding it in such a way, as far as I could see, she wasn't just like grabbing it and holding it out the window. She was holding it in a certain way. And I was thinking, why is a born-again Christian holding out a rosary? This is interesting. This is different. So And so immediately what happened was some people on social media were saying, oh, look, she's holding out a rosary. And within seconds, you had a flock of probably agents, probably bots, probably military, you know, psychological military type people who are just crawling all over social media. Because remember, the founder said, we are here to destroy the fabric of society. We knew that we were doing this and we did it anyway because it's a military operation. All of your social media interactions are a military operation. That's why people like Catherine Watt are not on social media, thank goodness, and why I've pulled way back from social media. So what you have is, you know, a grieving widow holding out what looks like a rosary. And you cannot get too, I guess the word would be dichotomous religions. You know, you've got born-again Christians, which are all about wealth and prosperity. And then you have Catholicism, which is all about, you know, kindness and compassion. They don't even use the word empathy. They engage in compassion. Empathy is a liberal term that was co-opted during the equity movement, the DEI movement. We have to have empathy for those less fortunate than us. We have to have empathy for those who are a different race than us. And Catholicism preaches compassion more than they preach empathy. And you can also find compassion is sort of a value to in Buddhism as well. So compassion is where Catholicism lies. Empathy, or some version of, you know, a watered down empathy, is where the born again Christians lie. So you cannot get two opposing religions more so. Born again Christians and Catholics, it's like oil and water. They really don't mesh at all. And for an open born again Christian to hold out a rosary is the message of compassion. It's the message of, you know, of humility and humbleness, which was incredible for me to see. And then, like clockwork, instantly you had the bots and the agents and the militarized action pouncing on anybody who would want to explore the fact that she's holding out a rosary and say, no, that was the necklace that Charlie Kirk wore all the time. All the time. And so I was like, what? First of all, born-again Christians don't wear crosses that look like rosaries. Like, they don't wear jewelry, typically, unless it's, you know, just whatever, you know. Women wear earrings and stuff. You know, like they don't wear, especially Charlie Kirk, who was a moderate, would certainly not wear a necklace that looks like a rosary. So I go and I look at as many videos as I can find of him giving talks, doing podcasts, you know, out on college campuses where he's constantly filmed. I mean, he was constantly in front of the camera, and he would wear these shirts, you know, these button-down shirts that, and sometimes, you know, he would have a tie on, but most of the time they would be open. And I never saw evidence of him wearing any jewelry. So I'm going to stick to my original thought regarding Erica Kirk holding out a rosary and say somebody has curated a message to us to, one, stay humble, act in compassion, and follow our instincts and follow that sort of, you know, all of the tenets that the Catholic faith holds through their analysis of the various saints, you know, which is, you know, kindness and patience and compassion and, you know, this very sort of Christ-like behavior, right? So, I mean, I'm just really being, it's a very watered down, I'm not even Catholic yet, I'm considering it, but I'm exploring, you know, this idea, right? So, you know, I don't pretend to be an expert in any of this, but the Catholics that I have seen who have behaved a certain way through, like, the COVID experience and then through this Charlie Kirk experience have been a lot more regulated They're not operating in a space of high emotion, which I really appreciate. So what I'm going to do now, so I hope that that's addressed everything. We've got this, you know, this imaging that's coming out all over social media of J.D. Vance holding the casket. This is reminiscent of the Johnson image of, you know, him being sort of at the forefront and at the front of JFK's assassination. We've got Usha Vance acting presidential by taking the arm of the grieving widow, just like we had, you know, during the JFK assassination. So a lot of these images are recreating that memory in us, and they're attaching that memory of the JFK assassination, who was a president, they're attaching that memory to this assassination. And I would almost venture to guess that in a few years' time, because of social media, our emotions are sped up. You know, I'm sure many of you have already forgotten about some of the things that took place recently, like the story of the individual who allegedly, apparently, shot off a gun near a Catholic school in Minneapolis, I think it was. So a lot of us have totally forgotten about that, because these types of experiences and these types of stories are designed to fuck with your brain, and, you know, you'll lose your capacity for your short and long-term memory, because you're so saturated with emotion, because your amygdala is overloaded. So let's play this last bit from Alex Zeck, which is excellent advice, something that I really appreciate. And hopefully you'll be able to hear it. Okay? And then I'll just go ahead and sign off. So thank you for listening today. I hope you got something out of it. Please share it if you feel that it would benefit any of your followers or anyone else in your life.
And this also leads me to the most important point. Irrespective of whether this was legitimate or completely staged, the most important thing is the perception of the people after the fact. What this will cause. It'll cause more chaos, more division. It'll cause more civil unrest and possibly worse than that. So the perception is what matters most, not the act itself. And is this causing more division? Is this leading to a lot of civil unrest? And how are you processing the information? And how are you transmuting it to make sure that you're not adding to that chaos, adding to that division, adding to that civil unrest? And the last thing that I want to say is the fact that in a matter of just a few days, we've witnessed some brutal murders by knives and also by a high-powered rifle, and we're watching this imagery over and over and over and over and over again. What does that do to our subconscious? How does that desensitize us? What does that do to our focused awareness? Those are the deeper questions that we need to be asking. We were not made, in my opinion, to handle this level of trauma to our psyche. So I'm asking you to be cautious with what you are consuming, especially as the world slips into more chaos, more division, and more unrest.